Emily Liddell.
And I'm Kyle Cacciadorian.
And you're listening to another episode of The Accessible Stall.
What are we going to talk about today, Emily?
InSpeak. Although I feel like now that I'm saying InSpeak, that in and of itself is some kind of jargon that I just don't like.
Well, you're going to have to explain to this non-knowledgeable person what InSpeak is, as if I didn't plan this before with you, before we press the button.
So I think the best way to explain it, and you can kind of jump in here, is words and phrases and ideas, I would say, that different communities use to describe certain things that don't make sense or translate well to people outside that community.
Right. Yeah. It's almost like, how can somebody outside of that community sort of come in, even though that's what we want in many cases, if the language choices that we use is off-putting or at least overwhelming to the people who don't already know?
Yeah, I think that in the case of the disability community, we can unintentionally be alienating when we are trying to explain and shed light on concepts that actually have a big impact on us, because the terminology that we use just doesn't make sense to people who aren't familiar with, I guess, the day-to-day of disability, or even really the ins and outs of, you know, experiences.
I mean, we're too professional to tell people TM. And I don't mean to speak for you, but I know that I sort of almost forget that not everyone knows. Meanwhile, it's like, you know, even like my parents, who obviously know me, like when I talk to them about stuff like this, like they know as much as they need to take care of me or to have raised me. But if I talk about, like, if I say the word inspiration porn to them, they'd be like, what are you talking about? And I could explain it to them and they'd still be like, what are you talking about? You know, and they're not dumb. And you would think that they're the perfect people to be able to, like, really understand what that is, because I'm their kid, but they don't. And that's sort of what we're talking about here. How do you communicate that?
See, my parents get inspiration porn, but only because I spend most of my time yelling angrily at the TV when that final story on the 6:30 news comes on, and it's inevitably an inspiration porn story. So they've just sort of adjusted to my yelling about it. But in all seriousness, I think that inspiration porn is a really good example to start with, because I encounter this time and again when I'm trying to give a presentation to people and I'm trying to introduce the concept of inspiration porn and explain to them why it's not a good thing, but I can't even get people to get past the word porn. So how can I accomplish my mission of trying to explain that you got to stop sharing inspirational stories that objectify people with disabilities when people see the word porn and freak out instead of seeing the word porn and understanding that it's essentially a way of saying objectification?
I mean, I guess I suppose you could say objectification, or you could say that phrase you just said. But I mean, isn't that the point of coining terms, is to condense complex ideas into simpler phrases? But I mean, how far down does that go? I mean, how, you know what I mean? And I agree with you. I think inspiration porn is exactly the phrase that it should be. And I think that people who get offended at that word, depending on why, they're either missing the point or they're too far gone. But also, I also think that that word is there for a very explicit reason. And although the choice to call it that was an explicit one, it isn't anyone's fault that when you hear that word, you automatically think of something that isn't what you're talking about. In this case, pornography.
Yeah, but I think one thing that I want to touch on that you said is that it really kind of hits you in the face, right? Yeah. It's a very strategic word choice, and I think that there's a reason for that. But on the flip side, I feel like it backfires a lot of the time, because nobody wants to see themselves as the inspiration pornographer. You know what I'm saying?
It's hard for me, and I imagine you as well, to feel that from their end, because we're so used to being on the business end of inspiration porn, which obviously also sucks. Like, we've talked enough about that, but, you know, I imagine it's sort of like, I mean, not really, but it might feel a little bit like being called sexist. It's like your immediate reaction is like, I'm not sexist, but it's like, it's not you specifically. It's just things that you have done that are construed as sexist now. And it's like, you never want to be labeled as the person who's responsible for that. And especially when you don't know what the term is, or if you get hooked on the word porn, it's never going to get to you, no matter how hard we try.
Or if you call it disability porn, which is my personal favorite, because a lot of people are like, oh yeah, I never share disability porn. And I'm like, you know, I should hope you don't share that on Facebook.
Do you want a cookie?
But
by the way, don't Google that.
Please don't. But
yeah, then that's again, a much different thing.
I know this. But what you said about sexism also makes me think about ableism, which is actually a perfect example of a word that I think still alienates people, because...
Yeah, I should have used that one instead.
And now I want to do a little experiment here. When I type ableism or ableist into Microsoft Word, I usually get the little red squiggly line.
It's not a word. You got to add it to your dictionary.
Let's see. I must have added it to my dictionary.
Here, I'll do it on my phone. But, say something interesting. Oh, actually, funnily enough, it is in the Apple dictionary.
You know what? Maybe that's why, because I'm on a Mac computer.
Oh, but I've definitely seen it before. I've 100% seen it before.
Yeah, that used to happen to me all the time when I was writing papers for college, and I would be like, ableism is just as real as racism and sexism. But to be quite honest, I don't think that ableism has any sort of recognition or raises any sort of red flags or sounds alarm bells in the way that racism and sexism does. I just don't think people get it.
If any of you listening, if your knee-jerk reaction to hearing that was, of course it is, consider your favorite social justice whatever probably doesn't have that listed. I mean, how many causes has there been where they've listed every single other ism there is, except for that? I mean, the Women's March is notorious for that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
And they learned. They learned, you know, bless them. But that happens all the time. I mean, everywhere. And it's like, then the question becomes, if the people who are supposed to be the ones susceptible to seeing these things aren't seeing it, I mean, how on earth can we talk to Joe Schmo, who is just a normal person with a normal life that has never thought of any kind of institutional anything because he has some form of privilege, but also he's too busy, you know? Like, how do you even do that?
Yeah, and also, and this is a little bit of a tangent, but a writer who I've worked with many times and admire very much, S.E. Smith, uses disableism instead of ableism, which quite honestly I think is a little bit more accurate.
I agree with
disableism
that.
Disableism than ableism. Yeah. And while that's not really the point of the episode here, I think it's worth mentioning because I also think that when we say ableism, people don't even have the right frame of mind when they're hearing a term like that for the first time, because it automatically centers the idea of able.
I would agree. In fact, if I'm going to start doing that now, if I ever am finding myself in the situation where I have to explain that to somebody. But I would also say that, like, obviously ableism is the far more popular term. So when you do see it, you're probably going to see it stylized like that. But yeah, yeah. I agree with you. That is way more accurate.
Yeah. But again, another term that I think alienates people rather than brings them into what we're trying to accomplish here.
Where do you go? I mean, like, okay, so I am some guy, right? And I bump into you on the streets of Manhattan and I say, oh, sorry, miss. Actually, no, sorry. You bump into me. It's your fault. And I say, oh, sorry, miss. And, you know, for some reason, you're feeling particularly teachy today. And you say, hey, you know, that was my fault. I wasn't watching where I was going. And I say, oh, come on. You do need a license to drive that thing, and now you're angry. There are so many people like that. And I know that a lot of them are going to obviously not care and be lost causes, but I have too much optimism in this world to think that most or even a majority of them at all would be that way. If there was just an efficient way to communicate these ideas to them.
I want little business cards. I think about this a lot, and it's not an original idea. I've seen it on the internet before, but just business cards with assorted phrases on them that are problematic and like a QR code that you can scan to read more about why this particular phrase is problematic. But the problem is, honestly, that by the time I got one of those out, the interaction would be over and the person would walk away. But, you know, a girl can dream, right?
Yeah, certainly.
Also, apparently, disablism stems from British English, where do things a little bit more sensibly, at least according to Wikipedia.
Hey, Wikipedia has never been wrong, except for all the times that it has.
I mean, it makes sense because they also say disabled people.
Oh, do they?
They do. Yeah. Oh,
neat.
Yeah, no, they're several steps ahead of us in
That's
life.
That's good. That's good.
But anyway, so back to alienating terms. Another one that is on my mind constantly is spoons and the spoon theory.
Mm-hmm. By a show of hands or whatever limbs that you have to indicate yes, how many of you know what that is? I can't see any of you, but I imagine that all of you just raised your hands and or limbs or whatever that you have.
What if you are a quadruple amputee?
Then you raise your nose at us, ma'am.
What if you don't have a nose?
Then if you are innovative enough to be able to find a way to listen to a podcast, surely that you have a way to indicate yes to a question posed to you by someone on those podcasts.
We're very adaptable people, the disability.
It's true. No, disabled people are like born MacGyvers, guys.
So anyway, I was just joking, obviously, but when I first learned about the spoon theory, it kind of filled a gaping hole for me in terms of understanding how I experience the world and how I can explain to other people how I experience the world. But the thing is, first of all, I've never really actually used the spoon theory to explain my experience to anyone. Instead, I think it's become a thing that disabled people or spoonies use to validate their own experiences to themselves. And I don't think it makes sense to dive too deep into what the spoon theory is, but essentially it's like you start the day with a certain number of spoons and you have to determine how you're going to spend your spoons. And each activity is worth a certain number of spoons. And it's the onus is on the disabled person or the chronically ill person to figure out how to spend their spoons and conserve as much energy as possible. So spoons is a stand-in for energy. And I recommend Googling spoon theory if you're not familiar with it and learning about it and its originator, Christine Miserandino on But You Don't Look Sick. Because it's very helpful, but it's become in-speak. It's become a symbol among the community.
But that, the essay itself, not the terminology used within, is a completely amazing, great way to do exactly what we're trying to do. That essay is a perfect, perfect way to describe at least her condition to an able-bodied friend. I don't identify with much of what the spoon theory says. I think it works better for people who are slightly differently disabled than me, but because it's become so ubiquitous in the community, like, it clearly touched a nerve. And I think part of that is because it can be used as a bridge between us and the ableds, TM.
I think the problem is, again, that we go around wearing spoon jewelry and spoon shirts and calling ourselves spoonies and comparing how many spoons we have and sending messages to each other like sending you an extra spoon or something like that. But it doesn't really serve the purpose to bring other people into our experience unless we then use a spoon or use our energy to be like, actually, let me explain to you what this means.
Well, but that's my point. Like, I don't do that. I don't do any of that. I'm not saying that you're, you know, I don't care if you do, but I'm just saying, like, I'm in this and I still don't do that. Like, I read those things. I've seen people say that. People say it all the time. It's a common thing. And I think it's weird. Not bad, just something I don't do. But my sister, right, who has no clue about any of that, I can tell you right now, if she read that stuff, she'd be like, what is wrong with these people? Like, I don't know. What? Spoons? Like, that's what she would say. And I'd have to be like, look, there's this essay, you know, and then I'd have to do that whole thing. And then she'd be like, oh, okay, but spoons, you know? And she's not an ignorant person. So, like, where, like, what do you do?
Yeah, it's definitely confusing for people. But on the flip side, I think the other fun thing that people like to do is co-opt terms, too.
Absolutely.
Like, now everyone and their mother uses the terms spoonie and spoon. And I know that kind of negates what we just said. But it's kind of like you either know what it is or you don't. And then sometimes the people who know what it is but don't necessarily have a quote-unquote valid reason to talk about energy units in terms of spoons, then they begin to use it.
It's true. It's like, yeah.
Are you disabled? Are you chronically ill? Then, like, why are you doing that?
Well, I think, but you actually raise a good, really good point, because I think that spoonie has sort of, I don't want to say, like, evolved from its original point, because we still do use it in exactly the way it was intended. But I can tell you, I have definitely seen people without disabilities, or, well, presumably without disabilities, use the ideas behind the spoon theory in their own lives, which normally in any other context would probably make us mad. But this is just demonstrating the point that we're trying to get. It is like, it cuts both ways. It's either you're clueless or you just make it your own thing to the point where it's meaningless. And it's like,
well, I think that people do get mad.
Oh, but yeah. I know. I'm just saying, not us right now.
Right. Oh, I'm not mad. But I also, I guess it makes me wonder, are you really taking the time to understand what it is that you're saying? And, you know, should we be up in arms? I should say, on the flip side, should we be up in arms about people co-opting a term like spoonie when it's exactly the kind of term that we want to use to get people to understand what we're going through? So I guess what I'm saying is, like, we build a bridge and then we want to, like, chop off the end
of it. Yeah, it's like, you can't have it both ways. It's like, look, here's something that will make you understand us. Oh, cool. I like it. No. You're not allowed to like it. All you have to do is understand it. We like it. You don't get to like it.
Or you can like it, but you can't have it.
Yeah, exactly.
Which, to be fair, is, I guess, how a lot of
Yeah, but that perspective is a little bit more valid, depending on, well, the your intersection of life. But even so, it's like, where's that line? I think the spoon theory is on it, you know, because honestly, on the flip side, like, a much more extreme example of an in-speak term, if like an able-bodied person called me a Crip or called themselves a Crip, I would sooner assume that they were talking about the gang than being disabled, because it nowhere in my mind would it ever occur to me that somebody who's clearly not disabled is describing themselves as such.
As usual, it takes us several minutes to get to the
meat and
bang
potatoes
point of the episode. Yeah. But yeah, that's it. Like, Crip is an excellent example, because I say Crip and cripple all the time, but I will punch you in the face. I won't, actually. if you like don't mind. Know me. Yeah. If you don't know me, or you know nothing about me, or you just call me a cripple as an insult, forget it. But meanwhile, I'm perfectly happy to go around calling myself a cripple, referring to parking spots that are accessible as cripple spots, saying I'm too crippled to do anything, saying I'm hanging out with my Crip friends. Totally fine doing that, but don't you dare do that if you're not any way affiliated with disability or a part of my life.
I think, yeah, I mean, that's a... We really should have said that 20 minutes ago, but we, you know. No, but I mean, it's, yeah, yeah. What can you do? Because it's like, when you say it, not you, but you, Joe Schmo, able-bodied person, it's like, when you say it, it's like, I know that you could be meaning it exactly like I am, but I know that you're probably not, you know? That's really what it is. If I knew in your heart of hearts that you meant it exactly the way that, Emily, you mean it when you refer to yourself, then by all means. But because I can't read your mind and because all the evidence points to the contrary, I'm not in the business of telling people what to say and what not to say, but it's not good for you. Just don't do it.
I think this touches on our recent episode, how we were talking about how doctors or dickheads kind of feels alienating versus like how Crip the Vote. It has some shock value,
yeah,
but it can also, I guess, kind of be alienating. And so I think Crip and Cripple are words that also are part of that very fine line, or on that very fine line of like, are we pulling people in or are we pushing them away? Are they completely lost or do they get it? If they get it, do they think that they get it enough that they suddenly have license to start saying it themselves?
And it's funny because that's one of those things where you just sort of know it when you see it. Like, there's no way to, I can't write down the criteria or explain the criteria by which I am beyond reasonable doubt sure that someone quote unquote gets it. And yet, if someone I have no idea uses all the terminology in the right way, or even as simple as has a wheelchair in their Twitter handle? Like, really?
Their twiddle handle?
Their twiddle handle. I mean, you know, social networks are out of control in the year 2018. Jesus, I sound like my 7-year-old grandpa. Get off the Facebook! it's like, I don't know. It's just one of those things where you know when you say it. But, like, also, to your point, and I'm sincerely asking this. This is not sarcasm. This is not, like, a thought experiment. But do we ever extend olive branches to people who would usually be in our little group, disabled or not, disabled or really good ally, whatever, but feel intimidated due to all the in-speak and jargon and practical college course worth of knowledge you need to know before you can talk about it?
How do you extend an olive branch for something like that? I mean, if you're talking, I guess my question in response to your question, because that's very helpful, respond to your question with a question, is, are you talking about an olive branch in the sense of like giving them kind of a free pass and like reaching out and trying to bring them in? Or are you talking about an olive branch in the sense of like avoiding these in-speak terms altogether and using language that brings them in? I just think I see olive branch in two ways. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, and I meant it in both ways. It's entirely context dependent on what happened before you decided to extend that olive branch. If a good friend of mine uses a disability term wrong, and I don't mean in an offensive way, I mean like just wrong or like close but not quite, I am more than happy to just be like, hey man, blah blah blah. And if they're decent, they'll be like, oh, okay. And if they're not decent, they'd be like, yeah, all right, whatever. But as far as using plain language, I mean, I'm a big fan of it. Although I'm also, I don't really have a problem with using jargon amongst people who you know it. But otherwise, yeah, I would avoid it personally. And I do for the most part. I don't call myself a spoonie. I don't call myself a crip. That's not because I don't believe those terms are valid. I think that if someone else who's not me or you or in this world hears me say that they're going to think the completely wrong thing and it's going to be my fault.
See, I have called myself both a spoonie and a crip. However, I can't help but feel like I get enough eyebrow raises when I call myself disabled instead of a person with a disability that, like, Spoonie and Crip and the like are at a whole other level, and I'm still here trying to get people not to clutch their pearls when I say disabled. You know what I mean? I think that's where we're at with people outside the bubble at this point.
Well, that's kind of far away from where we need to be, though, isn't it?
Yeah, honestly, it's to the point now where I think about before every presentation that I give or talk that I give, if I want to do a quick note prefacing my talk in which I explain that I'm going to switch back and forth between disabled person and person with a disability, and that neither is wrong, it's a personal preference, and it feels natural for me to switch back and forth. Like, I still feel like I need to defend and explain basic language choices. So I don't think that a lot of people, and maybe I'm not giving people enough credit, but I just don't think that people are ready to be brought along on the spoony inspiration porn crip ableism ride quite yet.
I agree with you, but I think that if you're doing a talk like that, that it's sort of important to do that. I don't think you're defending yourself. I mean, I'm not going to tell you what you're doing, but I would rather look at it like, look, I don't know who's in this audience, so they might not know that they're interchangeable. You know, it's not for me, that wouldn't be a defense mechanism. For me, that would be a way of just letting someone who might not know that they're both okay. Because, I mean, what if you're someone that does want to learn and has no idea about disability, but you find your way into whatever conference you're at and you're like ready to soak up all this knowledge and you hear this disability world renowned activist get on stage and like use terminology that sounds similar but isn't the same, and it's like, oh, okay, now I know it's the same. Now I know it's okay.
Yeah, and that's what I try to do. I think it's a two-way street in terms of how we welcome people into the movement. And in order to do that, we need to kind of meet people where they're at sometimes. But that can be a bit challenging to do when you start to talk about more highly specialized terms, for lack of a better way to put it. I mean, for that matter, I even still think that, and I'm sure we've had this conversation before, probably on some previous episode, terms like intersectional.
Oh, yeah. There's a really good Onion article or something like that. One of those websites that's like a man who finally read through 500,000 pages of queer feminist theory, finally understands why he's problematic. And like, the whole point is, like, you need that. And it's like, I'm not going to say you shouldn't need that, but yes, I am. You shouldn't need that. Because how on earth can you expect anyone to understand why what they're doing is wrong if you can't explain to them in a cohesive way why what they're doing is wrong? And it's the same for this.
Yeah, and when we only have academic jargon or inspeak to inform how we're explaining things in the first place, how are we supposed to expect people to even bother coming along for the ride?
Oh, and by the way, I said what you're doing is wrong. It's not just when what you're doing is wrong. It's also when you're doing stuff right. It's like, it's just more commonly for negative stuff. But really, you're absolutely right. It's like, if you need to learn how to learn what we're talking about, it's going to be an immediate turnoff for so many people. So many people who otherwise, I mean, I'm sure that there's bad people in any sort of sample group, but for the vast majority of people, they're just going to be turned off by the sheer like depth of the stuff.
Yeah, and I know that I mentioned when you were mentioning olive branches before about whether or not you meant giving people a free pass. And I think that coming back to that, I do not mean that just because you may not understand something means you get a free pass to be an ableist, racist, sexist asshole. But I do think that when someone is trying and they screw up, it's not that they should get a free pass, but that we should be willing to wiggle a little bit more. And I know that is labor on our part.
No,
it is.
Everything is labor on our part then though. Everything is. I understand what you're saying. I didn't mean to cut you off. You're right, sure. But like, where does that stop? Because the alternative is, if you don't want to do that, then you don't have to do that. Then you don't have to spend your labor, sure, okay. But then they do get a free pass. It's one or the other.
Because you're kind of giving them one by default. But I mean, really, then, you know, people are like, go do your own homework. Where do I start?
No, I don't agree with that either. I don't agree with that. And that's, I'm not talking about if you hear someone say something terrible, I'm not saying just be like, nah, you know, I'm not doing that. I'm not saying that. I just meant if something is slightly off color or like maybe misses the mark, use your common sense, use your good judgment, you know? If you're explaining it to them is going to make you more of a jerk than what they said, don't say anything. At least in public.
Unless you want to pick that fight.
Unless you're willing to do that. But then, you know, that goes all the way back to good old episode one about picking your battles.
Wow, it all comes full circle. This has been the last episode of Accessible Stall. Thank you and good night. No, I'm just kidding.
No, but you're right. You're right. You're always right. I don't know why I keep telling you you're right. You're right by default.
It's good to hear. No, I'm not always right, but this is a complicated issue, and there was a lot to unpack here.
It's funny. You always say that during the, like, episodes that are not complicated. And, well, relatively not complicated. And then, like, now this one, this, we could talk about this for hours and hours.
We should honestly make a t-shirt with a little accessible icon, and he should be holding a suitcase, and it should say there's a lot to unpack here.
You know, we've been meaning to reopen our store that we had open for like 7 whole days.
Please tell us if you would buy one.
Yeah,
if you've listened to this
podcast. Because let me tell you something, we'd buy one.
All the money would go back to transcripts, which reminds me that we have a little business to take care of. And why don't we just switch up the order of things before we do final takeaways?
Why don't we remind people how they can support our show? Well, first of all, because it's Giving Tuesday tomorrow when we're recording this, although it's going to be way done by the time you hear it. If you want to support the show, and you do because you're feeling giving like, go to patreon.com/theaccessiblestall. Just $1 a month guarantees that all future episodes of The Accessible Stall will be made accessible. Basically, we get to feed our transcriber. And if you do not have the funds, or you just don't want to, that's okay too. We would really appreciate a like on Facebook or Twitter, or a follow on Twitter. And maybe if you don't want to do that either, maybe you could maybe rate us on iTunes or write us a review. You can do that right in the app that you're listening to us on. You have no excuse for that one, and we love you.
Couldn't have said it better myself. So that interlude is over with. Final takeaways, go.
It's hard to be Olive-y. No, it's just,
I mean, I get you.
Yeah, isn't that weird? it is difficult in a way that almost doesn't feel difficult as it's happening, but upon reflection it is difficult to gauge when and how and where you use plain language versus InSpeak. I mean, it's really not black and white. It's not as easy to say, oh, you use InSpeak with who knows InSpeak, and those people are usually disabled too, and in the community. It's like, yeah, but maybe they're not. And it's, you can't just use plain language, because certain pieces of jargon have very, very useful terminology that any good person who wants to learn should eventually know. And so my final takeaway is, if you ever find yourself in the same pickle that we found ourselves in for the past 35 minutes, use your better judgment. It's probably right.
I don't really like pickles, but
pickles are delicious. You are wrong.
You just told me I'm always right.
I said by default. This is a non-default situation.
It's fine. We'll argue about pickles later. Tell us your opinions on pickles.
Swear to God, please. When we get out of this bathroom stall.
Can you imagine if somebody thinks that we've been in a bathroom stall every time we've recorded an episode?
We haven't. Sorry to disappoint you.
Wah, wah, wah. Anyway, my final takeaway is that if we want people to get what we're talking about, to understand our experiences, we gotta budge a little to let them in. Yeah, that's how I feel about that. And I know that not everybody agrees with that. And this is coming from me, who is the queen of whining about teachable moments. But honestly, you know, if you're going to make something a teachable moment, or if you're going to teach somebody something, sometimes you got to meet the person where they're at. Not all the time, and we should always expect the best of people, but unfortunately we can't. So sometimes we need to do what we can to make what we're talking about accessible to everyone.
And if none of you want to do any of that, you could just always throw a person a link to this podcast episode.
Wow, I see what you did there.
That was it. This has been another episode of The Accessible Stall. I'm Kyle. She's Emily. And might we say, you look great today.
Thanks so much for listening.
We'll see you next time.